Never go to the second location. Always trust your gut.
Hello, my name is Chrissy Champagne, and you are listening to Residue, a true crime podcast dedicated to keeping you paranoid. And as you know, on Residue, we tell you the truth behind your favorite movies, and you know I love a good made-for-TV Lifetime movie, so today we will be talking about the Lifetime movie Abducted, the Carlina White story. And before we begin, I just want to thank you all so much for all of the lovely reviews and the comments on Spotify. You guys rule. And as you know, you can always follow Residue on Instagram at Residue Podcast, Facebook at Residue, a True Crime Podcast, and TikTok at Residue, a True Crime Podcast. And don't forget, the greatest thing you can possibly do is leave a 5-star review or leave a positive review for your favorite podcast, because this really helps us grow. Thank you all for being here today. And don't forget to hit that follow button so you'll remember to meet the Resi crew back here every single Tuesday. Before we begin, I just want to warn you all that listener discretion is advised. Abducted, the Carlina White story is a 2012 Lifetime drama based on the real-life kidnapping of Carlina White. Carlina was abducted from Harlem Hospital as an infant in 1987. This film is directed by Vondi Curtis Hall and stars Kiki Palmer as Carlina and Anjanou Ellis-Taylor as Anne Petway, the woman who kidnapped and raised her under the name Nedra Nettie Nance. Sherry Shepherd also appears as Carlina's biological mother, Joy White. Now, this film focuses less on sensational crime elements and more on motherhood and emotional conflict. And one of the strongest themes is the complicated relationship between Carlina and Anne Petway. Rather than portraying this situation in a simplistic villain versus victim way, the film shows how deeply confusing it can be for someone to discover that the person who raised them also stole them. And Kiki Palmer's performance was widely praised for capturing Carlina's quiet intelligence and emotional restraint as she slowly pieces together the truth about her life. A Letterboxd reviewer wrote that this movie was a heart-wrenching tearjerker. There's no other way to put it. I watched this after seeing a clip on TikTok, and it's just such a hard story. I can feel the tears and the weight on my chest writing about it. The film itself, such as the storytelling and all, is easily a 4 out of 5. I understand and agree that the third act of the film is easily the weakest with some lulling parts, but I don't think it tanks the entire film as some people suggest. No matter how black and white you may think a situation may be, this film really depicts how nuanced and complicated things are, especially when it comes to family and how intertwined they are, and how hard it can be to separate them. This user ends the review by saying, "No matter what your situation is, I heavily suggest watching this movie, and I hope Nettie is doing well out there." Joy White was 16 years old in 1987 when she found out that she was pregnant. Her boyfriend at that time was Carl Tyson, and the two had grown up together. They lived in Harlem housing projects across town from one another. They had been dating about a year when Joy found out that she was pregnant. And this pregnancy obviously wasn't planned, but they stayed together, and they even went to their parents and talked to them, talked about what their options were. Joy and Carl decided to keep the baby, and they were excited for the birth of their baby girl. And on July 15th, 1987, Carlina Renee White was born. Carlina was born at Harlem Hospital, and she was a healthy 8 pounds. When they were able to leave the hospital, Joy took her new baby Carlina to her mother's house, and her mother was going to help her take care of the baby. Carl was working full-time, driving a truck and then working nights in a parking garage, and Carl would stop by Joy's mother's house at night after work to help Joy and her mother take care of Carlina. But on August 4th, Carlina got really sick. She was about 19 days old, and she developed a 104.4 fever. Terribly scary for these new young parents. So they rush Carlina back to Harlem Hospital. Once they arrive at Harlem Hospital, they are told that Carlina swallowed fluid during delivery, and now she had a really awful infection, so she needed to stay in the hospital. Of course, this upsets Joy beyond belief. She goes into the waiting room. She's just sitting there, and she's hysterically crying. She is a mess. She does not want to leave her child in this hospital overnight. And Joy says that this random woman just walks up to her, and this woman is wearing all white. She comes over, she sits next to Joy, and she starts talking to her about what's going on. And she's comforting her and hugging her. And people say later that everyone thought this woman worked at the hospital. I mean, she didn't have a name tag on, but nobody thought anything of that. Now, there is a scene in the film where Carl and Joy meet this woman, and the woman is very much portrayed as a nurse. Like, she really does come off as someone that works in the hospital, and they tell her what's going on. She asks the name of the baby. They say Carlina, and she knows that this is Carl and Joy. So she's like, wait a minute, did you name your baby after your boyfriend here? And it is true. Carlina was named after her father, Carl, and then Lena is her mother Joy's middle name. This woman is comforting both of them. She is there to let them cry it out on her shoulder. And you know how that feels when you're in a situation where you feel like everything's falling apart, and anyone who comes up to you to give you any kind of just love and comfort, you'll take it, especially Joy. She was 16 years old. Joy doesn't want to leave her child. She does not want to. She'll sleep in that waiting room, but people are telling her that she needs to go home. Now, there is a docuseries called Beyond the Headlines, The Carlina White Story. I have it linked in the show notes. Along with that series and an article in New York Magazine, those would be my two main sources for today's story. So in this doc, Joy White discusses what it felt like to be in the hospital at age 16 and just so scared, so young, not knowing what to do. And she was just so tired. And she did. She went home, and she did feel guilty for that, but she went home to get some sleep. And while she's sleeping, she is awoken by a knock on her door, and it is two police officers. Now, these police officers tell her somebody took Carlina from the hospital. I mean, it had to be a nightmare. Those words coming out of those officers' mouths had to be a pure nightmare. So shockingly, between 2:30 a.m. and 3:55 a.m., somebody kidnapped Carlina from Harlem Hospital. They removed the IV from this tiny little baby and smuggled her out of that hospital. Now, at this time, the hospital did have surveillance cameras set up, but none of the cameras were working, and there were hardly any witnesses. Joy and Carl arrive at the hospital, and they say that the whole place was just mobbed, filled with police officers, dogs. There's a helicopter. Everyone was looking for baby Carlina, and nobody knew anything. But Joy says, oh my God, all of a sudden I thought that woman that was talking to us in the hospital waiting room, something is up with that woman. And now they go and talk to many people in this hospital. They're talking to all the doctors, nurses, the whole staff. I mean, everyone is literally in panic mode, and everyone's saying the same thing. You know, we all saw that woman too, the woman dressed in white, but everyone just assumed she was like a volunteer. So now police have many people that have witnessed who this woman is. They immediately push pictures of Carlina out to the public. They are being released everywhere. And they get Joy and Carl to sit down with a police sketch artist. And right away, they do identify a woman who looks exactly like the sketch. And also, this woman had a criminal record. So they were like, oh, this has to be it. So they thought this suspect, 31-year-old Lucy Brockington, was their main suspect. She, at that time, was wanted for car theft, and, I mean, she looked exactly like the sketch. So they track her down. She lives in Baltimore. They go and they question her, and this woman had an airtight alibi. She did not do this. This was not her. So now they're back to square one. Everyone is just losing their minds. A little baby has been kidnapped. This does not happen. Now, at this time in the 80s, there was less focus on this issue because this wasn't happening. People weren't as paranoid about things as we are now. And I mean, the security cameras weren't even working, so real lack of attention. Joy tried her hardest to keep Carlina's story in the press. She was going to do any interview she was offered. She wanted everyone to keep talking about her baby. And just time goes on and nothing's happening. There are absolutely no leads and Carlina is still gone. Joy falls into this very deep depression. She left school for a year. She went on anti-anxiety medication and she started going to therapy. Now, her boyfriend Carl said he was going through it too. He could barely sleep. He could barely eat. He was really mad at everything, at anyone, at everyone. He said his temper was getting worse and that he would sit there sometimes and think, you know what? Why did Joy leave the hospital? Why didn't she just stay? But then he would be like, well, why didn't I just stay? So every single time he was around Joy, he was just reminded of Carlina. And it was the same thing for Joy. Every time she was with Carl, she was just reminded that her baby was missing. And these two just couldn't handle it. It's such a difficult situation to even imagine. Joy and Carl decided to break up a year after Carlina vanished. And Carl reminisces about how angry he was during this time. In the TV show Beyond the Headlines, he says, "If I had a whole lot of money, would you have found my baby?" And let me tell you something about Joy and Carl. Even watching them in an interview on this TV show, how just resilient they both are, how strong they were, it gets me emotional. They were so young and then they stuck it out. They really stood by each other's side. I mean, even though those two broke up, they did not forget about each other and they did not forget about the love they both had for their baby. They are always by each other's side, still to this day. In this interview, you can see the love that these two have for each other. While Joy and Carl are living an actual nightmare, 60 miles away from where they are in Bridgeport, Connecticut, there is a woman named Ann Petway. In 1987, Ann Petway told her friends and family that she was pregnant. And Ann was pregnant. At this time, she was dating this man named Derek Nance. This was Ann's boyfriend, and she wanted to have a baby with him, and she was pregnant. But Ann had suffered several miscarriages. So she told her friends and family that she was pregnant, and she did arrive off of a train with a brand new baby. And her whole entire family was so excited to meet this new baby because let me tell you something, the Petway family was tight. And this is a group of people who love the hell out of each other. They tell you in the docuseries that sometimes there'd be 20 of the Petways running up and down the block. They would take up full blocks. There were so many of them. So there's a lot of people that are getting ready to meet this new member of the Petway family. Anne was pregnant, but she suffered another miscarriage with Derek's child, but she wanted a baby so badly. She went into that hospital, she comforted Joy and Carl, and then she kidnapped Carlina White in the middle of the night, went back to Bridgeport, and introduced her new baby to her entire family as Nedra Nance. Carlina White was raised as Nedra Nance, and she went by the nickname Nettie. She lived in Bridgeport, Connecticut, and this was just 45 miles from where Joy and Carl lived. Now, Carlina grew up as Nettie Nance, and she had a very large family. She had many cousins, and she was the entertainer of the family. They all said that she loved to be putting on a show. When the family was hanging out, she was the center of attention. And Nettie said, yes, when she grew up, she wanted to be a star. But she also liked to be alone. And she liked to be by herself writing poems. She loved writing because writing was her way of expressing herself. When Nettie was 11 years old, her mother had a baby boy. And now Nettie had a half-brother named Trevon. And now Nettie says when she was growing up, her mother was pretty strict. She was told, you know, you do not ask questions. If I tell you to do something, you just do it. And she says she also stayed with her grandmother a lot because Nettie wasn't aware that her mother, Anne, was incarcerated. While Nettie was growing up, I mean, Nettie and the cousins, they didn't know about, they say, the adult stuff. Like, they weren't aware that Anne was in jail and that Anne had a criminal record. She committed petty crimes. She was being placed on probation at least 3 separate times while Nettie was growing up. And she, at one point, also pleaded guilty to embezzlement for stealing cash and clothing from the Hudson Bank where she worked at that time. So Nettie didn't grow up knowing about all of this. She just thought she was spending some time with her grandmother. And nobody in the family had any suspicion at all that Nettie wasn't Anne's child. I mean, they had no reason at all to question this. If anything, Nettie says that she thought maybe she looked more like her dad because she didn't think she looked that much like her mom, but she had no relationship with her father. Meanwhile, Joy has not given up. She still had hope, and there were still no leads. So Joy and Carl split up, as I said earlier, but they came together again to sue Harlem Hospital, and this was for allowing their child to be taken. I mean, yes, of course they should sue. Joy and Carl were awarded $750,000, and when they were awarded this money, they put most of it aside for Carlina. This stipulation was if Carlina was found by the time she was 21, she would have this trust fund. And this is another part of the story where I'm telling you how amazing it was to see Joy and Carl always standing united. So this case obviously goes cold, and everything dies down. And hope seemed to be lost on the investigators' part, but it was never lost on Joy. Joy never stopped trying to find her daughter. And you know who else never stopped? The Center for Missing and Exploited Children. They stayed on this case, and they were convinced that Carlina was alive. A representative for the Center for Missing and Exploited Children explained that when infants are abducted, it is usually by a woman who has suffered a loss of a child or suffered a miscarriage. And so they believe that most of these children are still alive. So, of course, they use the age progression photos. Now, Joy knew that the Center for Missing and Exploited Children had her back, and she's still trying to keep this story alive and in the public. She was still in the media telling everyone, I want to find my daughter, and I really believe that she is still out there somewhere. She knew that there was going to come a point that Carlina's going to turn 16, 17. She's going to want her social security card. She's going to want to get a permit, a driver's license. She's going to need her birth certificate. So Joy was just waiting for that moment because she knew she would grow up and she would need proof as to who she was. And you know what? That is exactly what happened. In 2005, Nettie needed her birth certificate because she found out that she was pregnant. And she needed health insurance. Nettie was 18 years old, and she asked her mother for help. She said that she needed to get her social security card and her birth certificate. And Anne said, no, don't worry. She tells Nettie that she's going to figure everything out. Nettie doesn't have to do anything, but she's taking a long time. And Nettie's getting restless. She wants to get some, you know, health insurance for her baby. So she goes up into her mother's room one day and she just starts digging through stuff. She's like, I'll just find the birth certificate myself. I want to do this myself. And she finds what seems to be a birth certificate. So she takes this birth certificate down to the Bureau of Vital Statistics in New Haven. The clerk takes it and the clerk is like, what is this? This clerk is saying that she can't find any of this information, that none of this is actually in the system. And Nettie's getting a little upset. She's like, come on. So she keeps pressing, and the supervisor finally says, you know what? You better leave before I actually call the cops and you get arrested because you seem to be trying to assume a false identity. She told Nettie that if she keeps trying to pass off this fake birth certificate, that this is considered fraud and she could be arrested. And Nettie explodes and she's like, what are you talking about? Whatever, keep it. And she leaves, she goes home, and she asks her mother, what the hell is happening? Now, a clerk from the bureau had already called Ann. They call Ann and they're like, what is this? This is fake. This is fraud. So Ann goes into Nettie's room. She sits down on her bed and she tells her what happened. She is just crying hysterically and telling Nettie that she is not her real mom. She tells her that her real mom left her in the hospital and Ann took her so that she could take care of her because somebody just left her there. At this point, DCF, the Department of Children and Families, opens a file on Nettie's case, and they're asking Ann all these questions about, you know, who'd you take the baby from? What hospital did you take the baby from? And Ann wouldn't really help with clarifying the situation. She just claimed that Nettie was born in New Haven and there were no records. So Nettie's not getting any answers and no one seems to be helping her. Like, the DCF isn't even like digging further into this. She had absolutely no info on who her real family was, and she's left to deal with this all by herself. She's 18 years old. She's pregnant. She is being told that the family she knew her entire life is not her real family. And Nettie grew up with a really close, loving family that adored her. So now her mind is just completely blown. On May 6th, 2005, Nettie gives birth to a baby girl named Simani. And she was in love. She was absolutely over the moon for her daughter. And this made her start to think. She starts thinking about how this birth changed her life. And she thinks about her biological mother. Like, is somebody out there looking for me? Because I couldn't handle it if my daughter was taken away from me. So the birth of her daughter actually helped Nettie find her biological family. Because Nettie is the hero of this story. Nettie is the hero of her own life. She figured this all out on her own. Her cousins discussed the fact that she was very quiet about all of it. She didn't really discuss it with anyone. Even though she was super close to them, Nettie liked to keep her feelings, her emotions to herself. She comes across as a really graceful, resilient woman. She is so strong. You can tell just by watching her in the interviews and beyond the headlines that there's just this lovely grace about her and the way she approaches situations. So with this situation, the hardest thing she's ever had to deal with in her life, she is very quiet about it and she's thinking about what her next move should be. Dealing with all of this alone, she thought that, you know what, I'm just going to have to move forward. I have a child to raise now. This baby needs me. I have to move on with my life. She's 17 years old now. She's a mother. In 2009, Nettie moved to Atlanta and she found a job as an assistant in a hair salon. And her whole goal was to just make a really good life for her daughter. She said that Simani was very well taken care of and Nettie was a great mom, but she kept thinking about her mom and what she had to have gone through. So Nettie gets on the internet and she starts looking for clues on her own. And in the fall of 2010, she asked her Aunt Cassandra for help. She said to Aunt Cassandra, listen, I want to find my mom and I want to see who my family is. And they didn't really think about what would actually happen to Anne, to the woman that raised Nettie, because they didn't know the truth. They didn't know what really happened. The only thing that Nettie was told is that somebody left her in a hospital and Anne picked her up and raised her as her own. So nobody was thinking that there was any kind of situation that was going to happen where Anne would be in trouble. So Nettie sees this photo of a missing baby from Harlem, New York, and she asks her aunt, doesn't this baby look kind of like me? And her aunt is like, I mean, yeah, but this baby has a lot of hair. So they were a little thrown off. But this photo was on the page for the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children website. So Nettie called the foundation and she really didn't know what to say. But she says, hey, I feel like my parents are out there looking for me And Nettie didn't tell the representative that she was talking to that she saw this picture. She was just saying that she's just calling to see if someone could help her. Like, she doesn't know what her next step should be. So this representative was wonderful, takes all of Nettie's information and she passes it along and they get right to work. So, I mean, they have been following Nettie's case for years. So they were ready to help. In January of 2011, a caseworker calls Joy White. And she says to her, "We found your daughter." A caseworker from the Center for Missing and Exploited Children sent pictures to Joy and Carl. Pictures of Nettie, but they knew her as their baby girl, Carlina. And they look at these pictures and they just know it. And Joy knows it right away. She is just like, oh my God, she looks just like you, Carl. Carl, she has your eyes. And Carl agreed. And Carl said that Nettie looked exactly like Joy did back in the day when she was that age. So they get a phone call from Nettie, Carlina. And when Joy answers the phone, Carlina says, "Hi, Mom." After this phone call, after they reconnect, after Joy is like, okay, oh my God, we found our daughter. Joy White called the New York City Police Department and told them her baby has been found. 23 years after she was abducted, Carlina White is reunited with her family and the whole family came over. We have Joy, we have Carl. They now have children of their own with different partners. The whole family was there and the reunion was a success. Everyone felt happiness and joy. Everyone felt like, oh my God, the moment has finally arrived. Joy said that it was just absolutely unbelievable. But problems develop because this story becomes huge. And by the time she headed home, Carlina, the media descended upon her. She was overwhelmed. She is the type of person that wants to be alone. She wants to be by herself, writing poetry, and the media is just bombarding her. Now, she wasn't discussing this with the rest of her family, the Petway family, the family she grew up with. They heard it on the news, and they were just dumbfounded. They say that there were so many emotions, and now the news is out there. Anne abducted Carlina White from that Harlem hospital that night in 1987, and everybody knows. I mean, Anne now has a 13-year-old son, and Nettie has a brother. She was worried about what was going to happen to her brother because Anne has to turn herself in, and now who's going to be there to raise her brother? And now Nettie is understandably just completely conflicted. She just wanted to know who she was. She just wanted to find out who her real family was. She didn't want the woman that raised her to go to prison. There are obvious disagreements as to what should happen to Anne. Now, Nettie just was upset for the impact that this would have on the family that she grew up with. Anne was upset for the impact, but Joy said that Anne had absolutely no remorse. And Nettie still loved the woman that raised her. Of course, Joy is feeling the complete opposite. You know, you can only imagine the feelings going through Joy. She had her baby taken from her. She missed out on 23 years of her life. And Nettie did state in the docuseries, the anger that they're giving off is only satisfying them. They are not caring about what I'm feeling. So it was very difficult for this reunion to continue happily at this point, because Joy wants to see Anne go to prison for the rest of her life. She wants her in jail till the day she dies. And Nettie is not understanding their anger. There was also some discussion about anger over the settlement that Joy and Carl were awarded, because some of that money was put away for Carlina. And they found her after the age of 21. So by the time they did see their baby again, all of the money was gone. They say that they needed that money to live. Carlina doesn't care about the money, but this whole entire situation fell apart very quickly. The reunion and the communication started to become very little. And Joey White says, you know, it's like I found her, but she's still lost. And that just breaks my heart. There is a doctor named Dr. Jeffrey Grief. He is from the University of Maryland, and he says that there is this thing called a halo effect. And this takes place when someone is abducted and then when they're first found, but there are very difficult issues to deal with that they're not easily resolved. He said that he has interviewed many people who were abducted and then found, and the birth parents, they receive their child back into their life, but they act as if the child is still young, and they don't know how to develop a relationship with who that person is now. This reminds me of what we just talked about last week with the Stephen Stainer case. When he returned home, his parents didn't know how to talk to him like he was a 14-year-old boy. They were still talking to him like he was their 7-year-old. And this is something that Joy and Carl were both dealing with when they were reunited with Carlina. Now, Nettie says for Joy and Carl, accepting a relationship with Nettie would mean that Nettie's still going to have a relationship with the family she grew up with. She's very tight with that family. They adore each other. And I will tell you that legally, Carlina changed her name back to Carlina. But she says that she will always be known as Nettie to her other family. So she feels split between two families. In the docuseries, they say that Nettie is a good, caring person who is in the middle of a storm, in the center of a media frenzy, and she needed the ability to sort through all of this. And Carl said to his daughter, Carlina, listen, you know we love you. We had a happy beginning, and we can still make this happy. In a 2011 New York Magazine article, Nettie talks about the night that Anne told her she wasn't her biological mother. And she states that her whole stomach just turned up. Like, what are you saying? What the hell are you talking about? This is not my family. That's not my grandmother downstairs. On February 10th, 2012, Anne Pettway pleaded guilty to a federal kidnapping charge. As part of this plea bargain, the child victim specification of her kidnapping charge was dropped, and prosecutors agreed to a 10 to 12 and a half year sentence. And on July 30th, 2012, Judge P. Kevin Castle sentenced Anne Pettway at 50 years old to 12 years in prison. The judge told Anne that this was selfish and, quote, inflicted a parent's worst nightmare on Joy and Carl. And Carl was not happy with this sentence. He thought that the sentence was too lenient and that she should have served the same amount of time that she kept their daughter, 23 years. But Anne Pettway did apologize, and she stated, I would like to apologize to the family. And it may be rejected, but I am deeply sorry for what I've done. If they don't accept it, that is understandable. I'm here to right my wrong. Anne Pettway served her sentence, and she was released in April of 2021. In 2011, when Nettie was interviewed for New York Magazine, they did ask her, would you ever want to visit Anne in jail? And she said, I don't really know. I don't like jails. I don't like hospitals. That's not what I do, and I'm not going to go out of my comfort zone. They ask, well, would you ever communicate with Anne again? And she says, yes, but it's going to take a little while for that to just, when I'm ready, I will know. Just not at this moment. Carlina White is her birth name. It is her documented name. But Nettie says, when someone asks me what my name is, I say Nettie. I don't tell them that my name is Nedra, and I don't tell them that my name is Carlina. Nettie's not what the Pettway family gave me or what the White family gave me. It is what I gave myself. Thank you all so much for being here with me today. I hope to see you again next Tuesday. Don't forget to hit that follow button. And until then, stay safe and stay paranoid. Residue is created, hosted, researched, written, edited, and produced by me, Chrissy Champagne. See you soon.